Always Holding the Smallville is brought to you by listeners like you. Nathan McKenzie, Dallas Hernandez, Gavante Chillis, Chris Fuchs, Joe Mickendo, Steve Rogers, Thomas Navin, Tim Miller, John Curcio, Atif Sheik, Molly Ficarella, Trayvon Brady, Mike Franz, John Lloyd, Mariana Sachi, Alana Gibbs, Rachel Miller, Casey Cochran, Andrew Parker, Nikarai Magdoza, Becca Zeifel, Eddie Bissell, Cameron Minard, Dylan D'Antonio, Nicholas Fansler, Catherine Caldwell, Kathleen Holland, Tom Gerke, T. Hamill, Nicholas Cosso, Jared Gibbs, Erica Flynn, Darren Kirch, and Jessica Kaminsky. Thank you so much to all these patrons, and you too can become a patron by going to patreon.com/alwaysmallville with one S. Hope to see you there.
I'm John Glover. I was Lionel Luther on Smallville, and I will always, always hold on to Smallville. And I hope you all do too.
Welcome to Always Holding the Smallville. On this podcast, we talk about each and every episode of the Young Superman show that ran from 2001 to 2011 on the WB and the CW. I'm your host, Zach Moore, and this week we have with us Mr. Gavante Chillis. What's up, Gavante?
Hey, man. How's it going? I'm glad to be on the show, finally.
Absolutely, man. Glad to have you. Now, a long time ago, in a galaxy far, far away, you asked me, you know, because you're a longtime fan, longtime listener, longtime patron. Much appreciated, my friend.
No problem.
You wanted to be on Lexmas, and that's what we're talking about this week. So this episode, it holds a special place in your heart, and we will get to that. But first, kind of tell us about your journey to being a Smallville / Superman fan. Which came first? How did you fall into all this?
All right, yeah, no problem, man. Thanks for having me on the show again. So here's the thing. I think that my story finding Smallville, you know, I am a veteran. I know I'm not the only veteran in the fan group because I've actually spoken to a couple of them on the Facebook group. So for most of veterans, we ended up in our deployments needing things to watch to pass time. So a lot of, like, you know, if you served overseas, you will find yourself with like terabytes of hard drives full of just movies acquired in various ways. We'll just put it that way. You got the pass time between patrols just so you kind of don't go crazy. So I was on my first combat deployment in Afghanistan in 2008. And my squad leader just saw me being incredibly bored. And he said, hey, man, I got these DVDs because I had, this is taking it back for some of the younger people, I had a DVD like combo, you know, the one he flipped up. And
oh, portable DVD player. Yes.
At a portable DVD player. Yeah. So he had a season one on disc. And he said, hey, man, you can watch these. It's a show. I think it's about Superman. I was like, oh, cool. Nice. Strangely enough, I knew really nothing about Superman or superheroes at all. Like, I kind of missed that. I was a really big sports nerd and an anime nerd. Not saying that those don't cross over with superheroes, just mine kind of never did. So this is how bad my knowledge was of superheroes. When I saw Smallville and started watching it, I just assumed this was the origin story of the old Superman movie. So it's like, oh,
it's like a prequel show to that movie. Okay.
Because I didn't know there were like different kinds of, you know, comics, and I had no clue.
Right.
So I'm watching this show, and I'm like, oh, well, yeah, of course Batman's not going to show up in the show. He has his own movies, and he wasn't a part of the – I was just so lost. But I started watching this show, man, and, you know, I mean, you've gone through season one. It was so endearing and so – it was just so sweet. And in a combat zone, it's just great to see that. It was wholesome, family-oriented. It was just nice. I'm married to my high school sweetheart, so him being in love with the girl in high school was very much – in line with what I was all about.
So was she your Lana?
No, she was my Chloe.
There it is, my man. Yes. All right.
I am a Chloe's guy. Sorry, all the Lana people out there. I am a Chloe.
We can discuss some of that in this episode too, because there's some things to say. Yeah.
Yes, there is. No, so I definitely got to marry my Chloe. My best friend became my wife, which is great. Which how the show probably should have been.
There it is. See, this is why Gavante is on. All right. Right. Yeah. No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah, no. I'm a combat vet. I will fight over. No, I'm saying. But the thing is, he only had season one. So Clark kills Lana and runs into tornado, and that's it. And like, I had to go a whole deployment, not knowing what happened.
Wow.
And I get back, and me and my wife, you know, I come back. We have our first kid. Smallville kind of goes off into the wayside for me. My second deployment, I have a hard drive this time, and I get seasons like 2 through 8, and I just burn through those.
Wow.
Repeatedly, like just hooked on it, and found myself in different countries, in Malta, Bahrain, Dubai, in Madagascar, trying to find internet cafes to download season 9, and end up finishing when I got home, man. But it's been my favorite show. It's awoken this super nerdiness in me that I had no clue other people shared. I thought I was the only person in the world that ever heard of the show. Then I stumbled across your podcast, and now I found another bunch of people who also enjoy the show with me. Because my wife, as you guys will hear, does not like Smallville. God bless her. She sat down and watched this episode with me for me, and she had fun. But I don't know if I can get her to watch 200 more of them. So
you watched this episode with your wife in preparation, yes, for this podcast, and this was the first episode she had seen.
This was the first and probably only episode she's ever seen of Smallville.
Where is her Christmas spirit?
Man, that is the only reason she decided to watch it, because her Christmas spirit is so great.
There it is.
Yeah.
Well, that's awesome, man. Like, that is a very unique road to finding the show. So you didn't see it at all when it was on normal broadcast.
I had no idea it existed, man. Which is weird. I feel like I would have liked it in high school. It's just fun to think about a bunch of combat Marines, like literally, like in like fighting positions in Afghanistan, talking about like the merits of Smallville. Like, we're sitting there like talking about like, why can't this guy just date Chloe? What's wrong with them? Just yelling about it.
Right.
Yeah, man. You know, 6'3", 245-pound combat vets. There's not many of us running around watching Smallville like this. So.
There you go.
Pretty good. Pretty good to find some.
Oh, there you go. So Lexmas, right?
Yes.
Why in particular is this episode one that you had flagged to potentially be on?
Man, I know it's a cliche to say I love Christmas, but I don't know if people can love Christmas more than I do. I love Christmas. I want to challenge Lance to this too, because I know Lance is also, we share something else in common besides being African-American men who watch Smallville. We both love Hallmark Christmas movies. I've watched already every new one that's come out, because they started in October. So if you haven't started watching them, you better start DVRing.
I'm falling behind.
They're great for some reason. But no, I absolutely love Christmas. It holds a special place in my heart. My wife is another big Christmas fan, and what my wife likes, I like. And we love binge watching these Hallmark movies. It kind of started as a tradition we did. It was our tradition of just like something we did together. I remember our early days of being married, just sitting back and watching these Hallmark movies. And they've kind of become like endearing to us, to where now we love watching them. And it's made our love for Christmas grow, and having kids makes Christmas kind of revitalized. As you get kind of older, Christmas is like, ah, it's great. It's cool. I like getting the gift. But when I have kids, which, by the way, for the listeners, I have 5 of them. I have 3 boys and 2 wow. girls. So Christmas in the house is a lot of fun. I love setting up Christmas for them. I love doing all those things. So it's the best time of year. It's cold weather. Everyone's in a decent, happy mood. I live in the South, so everyone's already kind of nice, but they're even a little bit nicer during Christmas. So what's not to like about Christmas, really?
Yeah, and if you're going to do a Christmas episode of a Superman show, you have to call it Lexmas, right? Yes. Like, what? I don't know. Like, it's absurd, but I don't really mind it. And I'm just really glad no one said Lexmas in the episode. Yeah,
that would have been a hard fit. My wife kept calling him Santa Clark during it.
Santa Clark. Okay.
But saying Lexmas would have been a hard pull. I know they try to like slip the titles in a lot, but
yeah, it's like, I don't, what else could they have called this? You know, like, I mean, there's 100 things they could have called, like,
yeah.
On the Patreon. So this is a top 10 episode. Yes. On our Patreon, which surprised me, frankly. I mean, this had never really been on my radar. I think this is a unique situation. I think this is the first time that we're talking about an episode on the show proper, as we call it over there on the Patreon, on the top 10 list, that we hadn't talked about before, that I'm talking about now. I think this is the first time. So I have a unique kind of perspective on this, because I recently rewatched this before this. So I've watched this one twice now before, and that's unique for me. But all that to say, I think we were joking around, and I think it was Matt Truex who came up with Kringle, which would have been an episode title.
Yeah, that would have been.
So,
man, it made the top 10 because you deny the power of Christmas, man. It's all in. Not the power of Christmas.
Well, I think this aired early December 2005. And at that point, Lance and I were college roommates, and we had gone home for, you know, Christmas. And I guess either like I didn't set the VCR or like, whatever. And I never saw this episode until it came out on DVD. And obviously I had an awareness of it because of Krypton site and all that. This is 15 years ago when you missed an episode. That was it. Like, yeah, sorry, absolutely. Wait for the deal. That's why I was one of the few people. I brought a VCR into the dorm. Okay. Like I was all about this recording stuff.
I just love the VCR. I am so upset that I missed Krypton site. I mean, I know it still exists. I do know it, in fact, still exists. But I just wish I could have been there in the heyday on the forums. I just wish I would have learned about this show in high school, like most people. So I could have been just as more in the trenches of the show like that.
Well, like Clark becoming Superman, better late than never.
Yes.
So I'm glad you're here.
I'll take it. I'll take it. That was good. That's good.
And, you know, Lexmas, right? This is the only Christmas episode, I think. I'm trying to remember. Did I forget something?
Maybe this heavily themed where it's like, if trust me, if we did, someone's going to call us out, especially someone's going to call me out for saying how much I love Christmas and forgetting that. But I'm pretty sure that at least this heavily centric, like the focus of it is around Christmas. I think obviously there was episodes with trees and stuff in the background, people mentioning the holidays, but maybe not one that's focused on like this episode, as far as I understand, starts on Christmas Eve and ends on Christmas Eve. Yeah. It seems to kind of be one crazy day, which I'm sure we'll get into as we go. But
well, let's get into it. Lexmas.
I can't remember ever being this happy. This has been the best day of my life. Thank you.
It doesn't have to end, Lex. Every day can be this wonderful. I told you this is the life you could have. The life you can have, Lex.
This is what I want. What do I have to do?
Just have to make the right decision, Lex. Follow your heart, not your ambition.
What decision? What are you talking about?
Lexmas is the ninth episode of Smallville's fifth season. It aired on December 8th, 2005. It was written by Holly Harold and directed by Rick Rosenthal. Now, those are a couple of familiar names as far as Smallville goes. Holly Harold wrote a few episodes in season 3 and 4. And she goes on, she writes all the way up till season 8. And Rick Rosenthal is also a familiar director. Now, he directed Rush, Visitor. He's back here for Lexmas. He comes back in seasons 6 for a couple episodes and season 7 and 8. So he directed a total of 7 episodes, so very spread out throughout the show. And his claim to fame, as I always say, when he directs an episode, is he directed Halloween 2, the original Halloween 2. Yeah. 1981. And he also directed Halloween Resurrection, which is the one where Michael Myers fights Busta Rhymes.
Trick or treat, mother.
That classic. I love that one.
Well, this episode, it's pretty well regarded by everybody. And you think, oh, who did Miles Miller do it? Did James Marshall? Like, you know, did Jeff Loeb? It's like, no, Holly Harold and Rick Rosenthal. So, I mean, regular Smallville, like, they're part of the show for several years, just, you know, for an episode or two a season. But still, you know, they're around a lot. They know the show pretty well by this point. And they came up with a great episode. So, spoilers, we both kind of liked it. We'll see how much we liked it as we talk through it. But we start out on Christmas Eve in Granville.
I'm just trying to figure out, is this Granville? It's just like Brooklyn in the 80s. Like, I feel like the Waynes should have been killed in that alleyway. It was just the most disturbing looking city. Like, if there's any other cliche way of saying this is a bad area of town. I mean, we're going to get to Griff in a moment, but he's kind of just waiting in a leaky alleyway.
Yes,
there's dripping water everywhere.
Griff doesn't make house calls, but he stays in this horrible, like, underground...
in a sewer with water dripping around him. And, you know, I mean, outside of Griff, you know, we got to give Griff props. Outside of coming back in this show later in season 9, he was a Kandorian.
He was one of Zod's top lieutenants, in season 9, yeah.
But I like to, like, headcanon that after witnessing, or I guess not witnessing, hearing Lex Luthor get shot, he decided to change his life and become the captain in Star City and hunt down the Hood in season one of Arrow with Detective Lance.
Yes, yes. He is Captain Pike. No, not that Captain Pike from Star Trek. Captain Pike from Arrow.
Captain Frank Pike.
Yes, several episodes of Arrow. Yeah. The actor, by the way, his name is Adrian Holmes, which is a real cool name, I think. He appeared in two episodes of Smallville as Griff, and then he appeared in 5 episodes as Bass-Cat with the Q.
Bass-Cat.
Yeah. But anyway, now Griff had actually been mentioned a couple episodes ago in Splinter. Alex was on the phone. He's like, "I want results, Griff," or something, and he hangs up the phone. And again, season 5, I've been saying this throughout the podcast and rewatching it now, I remember why at the time, season 5, like, this is my favorite season, because it was thought out. They're like, oh, this character's going to appear in a couple episodes. We'll plant a little seed here. You know, you might not realize it at the time, but when you go back and watch it, it's more rewarding because it's like, oh, they knew what they were doing for at least, you know, the first 2/3 of the season. But anyway, Griff is hanging out. And I believe, speaking of reusing things like actors, sets, this is the same like dark hallway set you see in every Smallville episode and every Arrow episode. I think definitely it's the tunnels from Justice.
Yeah.
Also, I think this is the dam in Phantom.
Okay. Yeah.
I don't know. It just looks really familiar.
Yeah.
To your point, for some reason, Griffith's hanging out in these tunnels. They're meaning over perhaps manufacturing or finding or whatever it takes something to take Jonathan Kent out of the senatorial race because Lex wants to win.
Yeah, which I find odd because Lex Luthor is a well-known billionaire and Jonathan Kent is a no-name farmer and he's intimidated by him for some reason, which I thought was pretty interesting that he wanted to get dirt on a farmer in Smallville, Kansas.
I think Jonathan says it in one of these episodes, probably Exposed, like Lex Luthor doesn't get in a race. He doesn't think he's going to win. So he wants to ensure that he'll win no matter what, which is a Lex Luthor thing to do, even the early Lex Luthor. But because it's early Lex Luthor, he can't decide what to do. He tells Griff, give me 24 hours.
Yeah.
And Griff's like, your old man wouldn't have hesitated. You know, so that kind of shows the difference between Lionel Lex at this point.
That seems like the equivalent to calling him chicken.
Yeah. For
the
Marty McFly over here.
It's like the Smallville Lex Luthor equivalent of being called a chicken.
So Lex goes out to his car. And to your point about this being Crime Alley, just two people just walk right up, pull a gun on him, make him give him his wallet, his watch. And then so like the little short guy who's like, you know, his girlfriend just shoots Lex in the back. And then she seems to get like really excited by it. Like she like got off on shooting Lex. And then he turns around and I thought, oh, it's going to be like an accident. Or no, then she shoots him again. And then I'm like, why are you going to shoot Lex Luthor? Like, how do you think this is going to end?
He was absolutely complying.
He did not pull a Thomas Wayne. He wasn't going to fight back.
He was literally like, I got it. He was taking his watch off.
Yeah.
And he puts two in him. I'm like, what are you doing?
Now, I'm going to go deep Smallville continuity here for a second. And I believe I mentioned this in the Patreon episode is, you know, Lex's mom is in this episode, you know, and let's go deep and let's tie it together. Right. If they, like, remember in Shimmer in season 1 where Lex had this watch that his mom gave him? It was like an Alexander the Great coin, you know, and it was like real sentimental. And for that one episode, it was a big deal. And then they just never talked about it again. I'm not saying they need to make it a feature thing, but they could at least use the prop and have Rosenbaum wear it in a couple episodes. Anyway, they could have been like, give me a watch. And like, you see his watch. He's like, I can't give you the watch. And you have some, he would never say this, but so viewers who don't remember it would understand. It's like, look, my mom gave me this. It's all I have left over. Like Dr. Strange. Everybody see Dr. Strange? He's got the watch from Rachel McAdams and he doesn't want to give it to the people who are going to jump him, that kind of thing. Right. And then, but because he's hesitating because of the watch, that's why they shoot him. Right. Instead of just shooting him for no reason. That's my, I'm nitpicking this to death. I really do love this episode. All right.
No, you nitpick things you love, and we love this show.
If I didn't care, I'd be like, yeah, whatever. But I care. Yeah,
no, it seems a little too like, hey, we are the villains of the story. No pun intended. They just shoot them. They were getting what they wanted. They probably could have got more. They would have like not shot them. Maybe
right. They could have taken the car. You know.
Yeah. But now they got to get out of there because they're probably wanted for murder. So they need to get out of town now.
Lex falls to the ground and wakes up, and he's in bed with Lana Lang.
Oh, man.
And this is you know, season five had really been ratcheting it up, the Lex, Lana, Clark triangle. What are your thoughts on Lex, Lana and that whole angle of Smallville, Cavante?
Inappropriate. Well, see, here's the thing. So as I watched the episode, I didn't have fan theories and a forum to go off of. I was just watching this as already an adult in the military. And I was watching this thinking I think in my own head canning just to make sense of it. I want to say that the only reason he took an interest in Lana was to get at Clark. Like I really wanted him just to use that as a way to hurt Clark because he didn't know, but he really couldn't physically hurt him, but he kind of could emotionally. That's probably not what's going to happen. They probably just figured, hey, we need this to happen. The writers did, but I didn't like it. I think it's weird. He is older, which, you know, saying in this episode, he specifically says, I've always loved you, which gets
serious
a little
problem with that. Serious yeah. problem. What is with the shows? And I've said it before about Lana and Clark and all, like, it's always been you. And I'm like, you know what? It's okay for you to be in love with somebody who didn't, you didn't always love them. Like, it's okay. You know, like, I'm just saying, not everything is some Disney romance. So
from actual experience, my wife did not like me at all when I asked her out. So I was smitten, and it took several times of her asking me to finally give me a chance. I won out, but yeah, you don't have to be in love with someone immediately or always just to be with them.
Now, the writer of the episode, Holly Harold, actually had a lot to say in The Companion. So in Smallville, the official companion, season 5 by Craig Byrne, available wherever books are sold, quote, Lexmas was a good way to try out, quote, how will these characters work together? What will their chemistry be? We'd always known that Lex was in love with Lana. There is a line he says in the episode to Lana, quote, I love you, have always loved you, quote, a fact that has been a driving factor in his life in the subtext of the show for a long time. We weren't sure how the characters would play out on screen, and this was a really good way to figure that out, and they were terrific together. And you know what? In this episode, they are terrific together.
Yeah.
But this
is an
alternate universe timeline reality. Yes. You know, this is not Smallville as we know it. Plus, I got to say, as we find out, this is 7 years in the future. Television and movies has completely warped my, like, how you're supposed to look at certain ages. It's like, oh, it's 7 years in the future. Of course, they look exactly the same, right?
Yes.
I'm as of this recording, I'm 32 now. I wish I looked the way I did when I was 25. You know, like, if I switched places with me, the people would notice. I'm just saying, like, 7 years in the future. But hey, they wake up, and Lex is completely clueless. And a kid jumps on. He's like, whoa, whoa, whoa. And then I like the intentional slow reveal that Lana is pregnant. Like, she gets up. She's under the sheets. She gets up out of the bed. You don't. And then she turns, and then Lex is like, Lana, you're pregnant.
Yeah. So my wife, who I have watched carry 5 children, watches Lana get out of bed, and she's like, oh, there's no way she's ever going to be that happy being that pregnant. Like, that, there's no way. I totally get your point about people looking the same in TV shows, because, like, right now, currently, like, you know, not to date this, but there's this, like, thing going around where people are showing themselves, because we're in the decade, how they looked in 2009. 2009, I was a Marine with, like, no facial hair, bald, and, like, a twig. Now I'm like a big bearded dreadlock guy. Nothing like I did. And I also have an issue with television shows making the child version of the character have the exact same hairstyle. Mm. Like if the kid has a certain length hair, he has that as a kid. As if the viewer can't realize
The same guy.
The same person. But yeah, no, she gets out of bed. She's super pregnant. And this is where the Hallmark movie tropes come in, which is where I fell in love with this episode, because they are, spoiler alert for people who want to get into Hallmark movies, they're all the same story. Every single Hallmark movie, and Lance will back me up on this.
And especially Hallmark Christmas movies, which is its own subgenre. Yeah. Yes.
They are all the exact same movie. This storyline, though, the person waking up to a different reality and having to live out something with a guardian angel or Santa explaining to them what they need to do is a common – I mean, it's not just in Christmas movies. They're in other movies as well.
This is definitely a plus one for movie plot as an episode.
Yes.
Pick a movie like It's a Wonderful Life, you know, perhaps.
Yeah.
Actually, the one I don't know if you've seen this, Cavante, but The Family Man with Nicolas Cage.
Yes.
That's what this reminded me of.
Yeah. Okay, yeah. like that.
Like, of all the ones that you could possibly pick, I was like, because it's a guy who made some choices, and then he, like, wakes up, and, like, he made all the right choices, and he has a wife and a family and that kind of thing. And that's what this reminded me of most, but obviously he has the Christmas thing going on. So this is definitely a movie plot as an episode. So
I mean, he wakes up, he has the world's most kid ever. As a dad,
jump on
myself,
top of you.
That kid has to be like 6 or 7. If my 7-year-old jumped on me in bed, I wouldn't wake up as pleasantly as he did. You know? So, I mean, this it's television, I guess. So I got to let it go.
But, I like what Lex says. Who are you?
Yeah. I do that to my kids sometimes just to see how they react.
Well, and this also reminded me, and I don't know how up to date you are in the Arrowverse, but Elseworlds.
Yes.
When Oliver wakes up and he's Barry and he's in bed with Iris, it's very similar to that. I think he's even wore like a white t-shirt like Lex is here.
Yeah.
But even the direction here is great because like in this fantasy land, like everything's kind of, it's very bright, it's very warm, like you
kind of like golden looking. Yeah,
yeah, it's very clearly like a different reality, and so like that's visual storytelling, which I really like. What the show is really, really good about, and it, you know, watching this, I'm like, man, this teaser's going on a while. This is like, it's probably the longest teaser. Yeah. I expected the teaser to be like Lex gets shot, and somebody save me. No, we get this whole like setup of this alternate, you know, life he has. And then, like, he has this realization, like, oh, wow, you know. And then, like, the lights, you know, we pass by some bright light or whatever. And then we cut back to Lex, like, you know, laying in the street. So, like, hey, guys, just in case you forgot, this is what's really going on here.
I'm assuming Griff heard the shots and called the cops. We'll just say that Griff actually did the right thing.
You think so? Okay, yeah. Well, he did.
So.
It's Christmas.
I hope so.
He did the right thing in the end. You know, he came and saw Lex in the hospital. So.
He did.
And I would be remiss if we did not mention throughout this whole teaser, they're playing The Spirit of Christmas from Ray Charles, which is, like, I like juxtaposition like that. So it's like this nice little Christmas song and this horrible thing's happening, you know? It's I liked it a lot, so.
Oh, yeah, it's one of my favorite things they do in television and movies. I really enjoy that.
Spirit of Christmas. That's the one we're going to play out on, by the way, because I'm a big Ray Charles fan, so.
Yes. Play it out for a while so I can listen to it for a good bit while I'm sitting.
Of course. So, yeah, somebody called the cops. Right, because then we cut the opening credits, and when we find Lex again, you know, he's being carted into a hospital. Smallville General, for some reason, I guess Granville doesn't have a hospital, but we have a plus one for hospital visit because Lex is
we
in the
do
hospital.
Have that. Yes,
and then we, you know, the doctor kind of puts the light in his eye, and that's a nice transition back to, you know, the fantasy land of Lex's future, and he's like, you know, in the bathroom, like what's going on here, right? And then he sees his mom.
No, he sees his mom, and the first thing my wife said was like, did she die? I was like, yeah, she's dead. Because once again, my wife had no idea what was going on, and she was like, why does she seem so young? And I was like, I don't know. So we looked it up, and the actress is actually younger than Michael Rosenbaum.
Well, I mean, you know, she is the age she was when she died, right? So she's the age she was when Lex was 12 forever. Right, because that's his last memory of his mom. And so I guess this is a good time to talk about this. Do you think, like, did this really happen? Or what is going on? What is your interpretation of these events, Cavante?
Oh, of did this really happen?
Is this Christmas magic, I guess? Is that your explanation? Because there's plenty of Christmas magic in this episode. So is that what this is or what?
Yeah, I mean, Santa is canon, so I'm
assuming. Santa is real in this universe. I mean, hey, kids, Santa is real. But Santa's real in this universe. What are the repercussions of that fact? But in an episode where Santa is made canon.
Yes, right? Santa is real.
I guess this really happened because you could say, oh, this is something that happened in Lex's head, right? But Wes, he was on this near-death experience. You could say that. But then also a lot of things line up like this is your future. And if you make the right choice, then this won't be your future, et cetera.
Yeah,
so.
There's also specific dialogue that kind of supports this is actually a future that would happen. I mean, like Jonathan Kent's like, hey, you know, basically Lex getting everything he wanted to get, like having Jonathan's approval.
But that makes it seem like though it's his fantasy though.
Yeah.
Because this is too good.
Yeah, it is. But I mean,
up till the end anyway. but no, actually in Void. Right when Lex has another near-death experience, I should have had that on the tally board.
Man.
Near-death experience,
yeah.
But he sees his mom again, and he's like, "Oh, that was real." So they kind of like established that's their way of confirming this. So I don't know. It's kind of better if it's vague. I don't know, but like this is a Christmas Carol, you know, whatever, right? I mean, he even mentioned Scrooge at the end. So that's basically what this is. And for some reason, we've jumped ahead 7 years and his mom is his guide in this fantasy land. So,
yes.
That it, look, if you go that far, if you just go with the episode there, it's great. So, yeah. Just say, you just gotta take that leap of faith with the episode. And that's where we are. Lex is in this life and he's like, am I dead? And his mom's like, no, you're very much alive. This could be your life. And, you know, his kids are making him like, hey, we got to go. Or his kid, you know. And you said he's six or seven, right?
Yes.
Is this kid not, as a father of five, is this kid not way too big for a car seat?
Oh, my. Me and my wife had like, we had to pause it because there's a couple things that parents of small kids will know. One, that kid, if he's, first off, Lex is just holding a booster seat. You don't even have to like buckle that in. You just pull the strap across.
It was pretty funny though.
Yeah. So he's trying to put it in backwards. He just like is trying to look like he doesn't know what he's doing. But yeah, that kid, the kid's like 2 years off from sitting in the front seat. Why? That kid's like definitely not asking for Happy Meals anymore. Like, why is he
right.
baby car seat?
Well, it was funny. Like, obviously Lex doesn't know how to use it because he's Lex Luthor and this is new, but also apparently in that universe, he's a goofy dad who doesn't know what he's doing either. So that's amusing, I guess.
Yes.
So.
another fantasy was my wife laughing, saying that there's no way if I struggled that much with a car seat and she had to be like at least 9 months. Well, she was 9 months pregnant.
Right.
To go down and do it herself. She's like, you wouldn't have got that with a smile like Lana gave.
Oh,
like you
would have just let me do it, honey.
She's just in his fantasy. She's just the most endearing, supportive, loving. Just I'm just happy to just do whatever you need me to do. Why?
Another mark in the tally of perhaps Lex did just invent this all in his head. But yeah, and she you know they're going to get a Christmas tree. Him and little Lex Jr. Alex.
Yes,
like
I don't Alexander.
Would Lex name his son after himself? Like this version of Lex? Like,
no.
Right. Just saying. So. But whatever. And they named the daughter after his mom, which is, you know.
Yeah. I mean, he might as well have named his son Julian.
Yeah, I was thinking that too, right? This is my son Clark. But Lana tells him that we're on a budget. He's like, a budget? And like, yes, as you know, 7 years ago, this is such like exposition for the audience conversation. You know, you renounced your family name and your father cuts you off, but we've been you getting shots, the best thing that ever happened to you. I don't know if that's in this scene, but it's around this time.
That's
right?
Later. She says that in front of their kid?
Yeah. It's like, you what? What happened to you, Dad? But no, it's cute. And I got to say, Rosenbaum does an excellent job in this episode.
Yeah.
I mean, he's a comedic actor, but he's a, you know, that's his, I mean, and if you've seen him in anything other than Smallville or just in real life, he's a complete goofball. But he plays a villain so well, but he also plays the drama so well. And in The Companion, Greg Beeman talks about Rosenbaum's performance. He says, quote, when Michael has a chance to really open up and do something new, he goes for it. When you have a great script and the actor responds to the material and the director achieves the goals of the material, then it's all great. So, yeah, I mean, even the people behind the show were like, Rosenbaum's got it, man.
Yeah, no, and I think that's, you know, there's other factors, obviously, to why I love this episode so much. But I think it has to be, honestly, I like these alternate reality episodes where the actors have to portray different versions of themselves and different characters, because I do enjoy kind of taking a step back and watching the actors have fun, or what I think would be fun for them. And like now that as you know, I've seen them outside of the show and I can see and I listen to Michael Rosenbaum's podcast and I've watched him in the panels and everything. He's just a big goofball. He had to be having fun doing that. Just everyone getting to do something slightly different than what they're, it's just like doing something different at work every once in a while makes it more fun, makes it light. So it's really fun to watch them actually get to do something that you can look at and say, they're probably having a lot of fun doing that.
Yeah. And I think like to your point, you know, these alternate realities or what if episodes as fans, we enjoy these because it gives us something different. You know, you can do crazy stuff that you would never see normally. And that's why, you know, because let's face it, it's a TV show. They got to kind of reset back to one every now and then. You know, Lex finds out a lot about Clark and then now he's back to not knowing anything. Or Lex and Lana almost get together. No, we got to set it back to one. But then these alternate timelines and stuff, you can do whatever you want. And they don't really have to explain a lot. You don't have to worry about how this happened here. And you get to see these people out of their element. You know, and as I often say, it's great to see Tom Welling playing a villain. Here it's great to see Lex just playing a goofy dad, right? Yeah. So
you get to see fun alternate things, like maybe Clark and Chloe actually being together, which is how it should have been from the beginning.
So, okay, let's discuss this. Okay, let's discuss. I am a big, you know, Clois fan from back in the day.
As am I. From this day still, yeah.
C-H-L-O-I-S, right? I do still hold that would have been the stronger story for the show to take. But as I've also said many times on the podcast, Erica Durance's Lois won me over in season 8. When they actually allowed her to be Lois Lane, you know, that was part of the problem. When Lois shows up, Chloe is still Lois and Lois not Lois at this point in the show. And that's like, what's going on here? Now, okay, Holly Harrell talks about this extensively in the companion. Now, we're talking about this now because Lex and Little Lex go to the Christmas tree farm.
Yeah, they're at the farm.
And they just run into Chloe and Clark there. Yeah. And Chloe has long hair, which that's the longest hair we've seen on her. Like, she's writing a book. And Clark is a reporter of the Daily Planet. He's wearing a red scarf and a blue shirt, which is a nice little nod. Uncle Clark, make me fly. He picks him and makes him fly. Clark should have been wearing glasses, though, I think.
Yeah. It just
that's the one thing that makes me think this is not the future.
Yeah, he's not wearing glasses. Right. No, yeah, Chloe comes up with those very obvious extensions, but I did like them on her.
but you're like, oh, well, are they together or what? Because they don't say so much, but like when they walk off, Clark kind of puts his arm behind her.
Yeah. That was my indicator. I don't just walk with my friends like that.
So my theory is this is the alternate timeline, one of the alternate timelines from Reckoning. Right, because Clark changes time. This is something season 5 all is connected this way, and I like it. Right, so obviously Clark changes time. Lana doesn't die, but Lois almost dies in that episode. Clark saves her life upstairs because she hit her head and was about to get electrocuted upstairs in the Talon. So Clark saves her life. So then it shifts over from Lana to Lois to then his dad. Right, because he saves them both, and the show never even acknowledges that, thinks about it. But if you take a step back, you can see. So Lois would have died, all right, there. So then obviously she's not in this episode. Okay, Erica Durance can only be in 13 episodes up till season 8, so that's why. But looking in the universe, she's not in the future. No one says anything about her. She's not a factor. Chloe and Clark work at the Daily Planet together, and they're kind of together. And you know, maybe she. No one says the name. No one says Chloe's name. All right. So let's talk about this. Like I said, Holly Harrell talks about this. I was shocked to find this. She talks about this extensively in the companion. So here's what she had to say. Talking about how no one says Chloe's name in the future, and it's kind of implied that her and Clark are together. Quote, it was a little bit of, you know, you may think you know everything that's going to happen on the show, but you may not. She used Lois' name in the past. Who knows what she'll do in the future? It's like, okay. And then she goes on to say, that is something very important to me. I would say that on Smallville, we are really attentive to what the fans say, whether or not you believe it. The characters aren't always going to do what you want them to do, just like your friends and people in real life aren't always going to behave the right way. But we do understand the fans' feelings about that, and that's part of the process. We keep an eye on what the fans are saying. We all want to be loved, too. And then they ask, you know, Craig Byrne asked her if she's subscribed to the Clois theory. And she says, I don't know, because I love both of these characters separately. So I don't know where I would want to see that go in the future. There are a lot of roads we still want to go down with both of those characters. So I don't know yet. But I like that we're keeping it open. Despite Lois Lane's appearance, we haven't totally quelled that theory. I'm like, what? This is a writer of the show. Talking about the Clois theory. Like, this is evidence.
You know? I'll take it. I'll take that.
Right?
I like that.
This shocked me to find this. Quote, no. The writer of this episode speaks at length. It's crazy.
She must have been on the forums as well. She sounds like a smart person. That's all I'm saying.
So, yeah. I mean, like they obviously had fun with this. I mean, look where season 5 ends with the Chloe and Clark kiss. It's like the most epic thing in Smallville at that point. I was like, oh my God, it's happening. And then they freaking kill Lois in a season 6, you know? I mean, they literally kill Lois, and the Chloe resurrects her with her kryptonite powers. And anyway, there is a reason why for years fans stuck with this theory. And right here, this is exactly why. So well, they intentionally kept it vague to mess with us.
I was going to mention, like, you know, once again, I'm watching the show without having the history and the fan theory to go off. But the episode where she uses the name Lois, I was like, oh, okay. She's just going to eventually become, okay, that makes sense. Because she's, you know, so, but like, then Lois Lane showed up. I was like, oh, well, I mean, what do I know? So I'm just watching the show.
Well, did you, okay, after Lois showed up, though, did you still think it might happen? Or what did you think?
I still definitely wanted it to happen because, like you were saying, like Lois wasn't really Lois. I mean, I wasn't down necessarily for Lois, which I don't understand the richness of the character because I wasn't a big fan of Superman growing up or Lois Lane and seeing everything they've gone through. But just kind of like she was there for the eye candy, I guess, you know?
Yeah.
So she was just eye candy every episode and she dated everybody in the Justice League. So that's, I mean, it's strangely enough, and we're going to get to that conversation later on the episode where Clark and Lex are talking about Clark and Lana's past, how awkward that is. But I do actually know friends that one dated a girl in high school and now the other one is married and they are still friends, but they don't talk about it, which makes sense not to do.
Yeah, it's got to be so weird for that Clark to be like, why are you talking about this 7 years later?
Yeah, you like, know, it's Christmas Eve, man. What are you doing?
But all this to say about Clark and Chloe here, like they don't interact at all at that party, at the Kent's house. So again, they're keeping it very vague, right? So I think that was very clever.
It's like, an alternate reality.
You can read into whatever you want, but this is the timeline where Lois Lane died. Chloe took her name. Maybe she didn't. Maybe she used that pseudonym Lois Lane to write that book on Luther Corp, that expose she's writing, which she says Lex helped her out with, an anonymous source. So there you go. Right? And Clark's a full-fledged reporter, as he says. And then they go off about their business, and they're going to see him at the party tonight. And they go off hand in hand or arm in arm or whatever. I mean, they're not holding hands, but as we said, Clark kind of puts his arm around Chloe, and they walk off. And you're like, that's what could have been. That's what could have been, show. But anyway, that's my Lexmas, waking up in a universe where Chloe was Lois Lane. Now, obviously, considering current real-life events, it all worked out for the best.
It did. It did.
Because it did. Lois Lane would not be appearing in Crisis on Infinite Earths.
You would not.
If Chloe Sullivan had become Lois Lane. So there it is. I'm aware of it. I said it. We can move on from it now.
Yeah. Yeah, I just wish people could have seen my wife's reaction when she saw the actress Allison Mack, because she knew that she was on the show, I guess, because she had heard me mention it. But she was like, oh, that's the girl. Like, we're just going to watch the episode. We're just going to watch the episode. She's one of my favorite characters. Okay.
So back in the real world, Clark and Lana are, you know what, some of these scenes might be out of order, but you guys get the gist of it, right? Clark and Lana are at the Kents. They're getting ready for Christmas. I like how, you know, Jonathan's trying to get some cookies and him and Martha have a nice little moment, you know. Martha makes a wisecrack about every politician has their hand in the cookie jar. So, you know, they're getting ready for a Christmas party, and Lana tells Clark, like, you know, it's usually just me and Nell at Christmas. I'm like, Nell?
Yeah.
What a callback. I'm talking about Lex's watch. You're talking about Nell.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Ever heard of her? Like,
I honestly don't know the last time she was mentioned. You know?
No. Yeah.
I guess her and Henry Small still aren't talking, by the way.
Also, like I, once again, I married my high school sweetheart. There have been holidays where she has been in my house. I'm not making out with my girlfriend in front of my parents.
No public displays of affection in front of the family, okay?
Get off each other, guys. It's Christmas Eve. Yeah. It's okay. Like, just enjoy watch a movie. Like,
yeah. Well, you know, this is their first Christmas together, and thank you for making this not a plastic hollow Christmas like all my other, like, God, Lana, was your life that terrible? Like, you know,
it's pretty awesome.
Yeah.
But
then Clark gets a call from Chloe, and apparently Clark's ringtone for Chloe is some Christmas music. I'm not sure what that was about.
Which back in 2005, he would have had to pay for, which I just find it funny seeing Clark going through like the thing to pay 99 cents for a Christmas song.
Well, what's funny is, and I saw this as a meme on the internet the other day. It's like, early 2000s, like you write your own ringtones for people and assign them to each of your friends. Today, you keep your phone on silent at all times. So it's like, it's funny how that's changed. But Chloe calls Clark and she's like, Clark, I have an emergency. I really need your help. And you're like, oh, wow, something serious is going down in the Daily Planet. So Clark runs off to help her out, and he gets there and Chloe reveals to him that the basically the toy drive of the Daily Planet has gone south. All the Teamsters are on strike. I'm not sure how that affects the toy. That's a very poorly planned toy drive. If you leave it to your intern you hired 2 months ago to be in charge of like thousands of toys, right?
Yeah, she's like a couple thousand, which is also she's explaining the situation, asking Clark to do his Clark thing with the janitor just like right there at the elevator. Like, I'm hoping that guy's not paying attention to these two people walking by him in the middle of the night on a holiday. Like,
right. And I like what Clark says when he goes in there. He's like, this isn't Toys for Tots. This is Toys R Us.
Yeah.
Another dated reference. Pour one out for Toys R Us. Am I right?
I do miss it.
Like, my mom told me when they went bankrupt, she's like, oh, you're never going to be able to take your kids to Toys R Us. I was like, yeah, I know. It's depressing. That's like part of the experience. I'm glad you got to take your five kids to Toys R Us.
I did. I spent way too much money there. So I don't know if it's a good thing that it's gone for me.
One of the saddest pictures I ever saw was, you know, that the guy in the Jeffrey costume, like holding up a sign like, thanks for the memories. And it was like the empty Toys R Us. I'm like, that is so sad. It's my childhood just closing before my eyes. So,
oh man, we're getting old.
Oh man. So yeah, a Toys R Us reference. Very good. So another 1-2 punch of outdated references, you know, Chloe like gets Clark to help and he's like, oh, but they don't have anything. He's like, all right. But I promise Lana. She's like, Lana will understand. She just wants to keep Clark and Lana apart on Christmas. That's her game here. Right?
She says Lana will understand or whatever lie you tell her.
Yeah, right? What the hell is that?
What a horrible thing to say.
You were a terrible friend to both these people. But she's like, all right, I already MapQuested all the addresses. Like MapQuest.
I literally, in my notes, I have it like all my fonts 10 except for MapQuest. It's on a 20 because I'm just like, MapQuest is, do people even know what MapQuest is?
No, I mean, like I used to print out, you know, you go to a friend's house and you've been there before, you print out the MapQuest, yeah. You put it in your car. You're like, okay, I always print out the street by street directions and the map, you know, just to be safe. You know,
got to read it. You have to read it
because you don't have Wi-Fi on your flip phone back then. So I mean, you're at the. I don't know how people got anywhere before the internet. Like, I'm so impressed by people.
You were fancy, had a flip phone. I had the straight Nokia. Well, that was
awesome. So she gets Clark to help, and he starts doing his super speed thing. And it's pretty cute because he's going around from Christmas tree to Christmas tree. He's wearing it. She puts the Santa hat on him and takes a picture. He's like, ugh. He's the same disgust that Tom Welling treats with any costume. He treats with the Santa hat, right? But anyway.
He's running through houses, and my wife's like watching him do it. And I'm just like, I'm so used to seeing Clark super speed everywhere. And she's like, is he breaking through the doors? How are they getting in the house?
Well, clearly he's coming down the chimney.
He must be. Is he phasing like the Flash? He's just like going so fast. He's just appearing into people's living rooms.
Yeah. Magic of Christmas. Okay.
Christmas magic.
He's super speeding around, and it is really cute because like he sees some milk and cookies, and he has some. Yeah. So now some kid's gonna wake up and like, you know, Santa ate their milk and cookies, so that's really cute. And then he finally ends up at a house, and it's very like. It's very Nightmare Before Christmas situation because he's at the Christmas tree and this little girl comes out. She's like, you're not Santa. He's like, sure I am. I'm the new and improved.
One of the first positive things my wife said when she said, you're not Santa, she was like, yeah, I'm the hotter one. And I was like, yeah. Oh, now you see why so many people like this show, sweetie.
The new and improved version. Yeah. It's true though. And I know a lot of girls in high school that just watch just because like, oh, Guy Fawkes Clark is so hot. You know, I was like, hey, whatever gets you watching, right? So
yeah, the burden he must have had to carry.
But this little girl, she's like, you're not Santa, he's Santa. And she points outside and there's this like drunk Santa like stumbling around on a roof. And yeah. Clark goes over to him and then you know what? This is a really great Superman moment, you know?
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Superman sees a guy. Obviously he doesn't, because Clark lives in the real world. He's like, clearly this is some Santa impersonator.
Yes.
You know, who's this goofy drunk? Because we've all seen it, you know. I mean, there's a great Twilight Zone episode called The Night of the Meek, and it's about a guy who plays Santa Claus at Macy's, but he's an alcoholic. And all he wishes for Christmas is that he could really be Santa Claus to kind of give presents to all the kids. And it's a great episode of The Twilight Zone. It's like a Christmas special. So put that on your – when you watch this and watch Night of the Meek from The Twilight Zone on Christmas. And also the Justice League episode Comfort and Joy with Martian Manhunter, also a good one. So anyway – that's your Christmas 3-pack.
I really love Clark's opening line to seeing a potential suicidal person at the edge of a building. He says, why don't you have a seat? You could always jump later.
But he's connecting. He's connecting with them.
Oh, it's such a good line because me and my wife are sitting there, we're like, yeah, that's reasonable. Yeah, approach. I will. I could always jump later.
So Santa, because Clark's like, Santa, because you don't know. I think he's like some drunk.
Yeah.
And you know, he's literally got his bottle of alcohol there, and he's like, Christmas is dead. People just take, and bitch. I was like, whoa, Santa Claus just said a curse word.
Santa Claus said the B word, as my kids would yell.
Yes, that was shocking. You're like, oh wow, okay.
It's even worse because it's the real Santa.
Yes. So what is what do you think of that? Because as we find out, this is the real Santa Claus. I guess he's just depressed at the state of the world at this point and decides to just take the night off. Huh?
Man, he just needed to wait like 15 more years. He could have really seen the world.
Like, what are you drinking about in 2005, man?
What was that about 2005?
But no, this is it's a really great Superman moment because they sit there and they talk, and we cut back to Lex here at some point. Let me cut back, but we can just wrap up the Santa part now. So apparently, you know, Clark has told him like the whole life story or something in between.
Yeah.
Santa's like, let me get this straight. You gave up Christmas Eve with the girl of your dreams to help your friend out with Christmas? Well, I guess people don't suck after all. You know, that's basically a paraphrase.
He did mention, which I'm assuming it should have tipped us off that he might have been the real Santa, because I don't think Clark would have told him that he was spying on her.
Yeah, well, that's right.
The girl that he'd been obsessed with and spying on through a telescope. I'm like, why would Clark tell this strange man?
Look at these deep cuts. We're talking about the telescope, right?
Yep.
And we're talking about Nell. And you're telling me they couldn't pull out Lex's mom's watch that he gave Lex? I don't know about that. But anyway.
They just needed a better reason. Better excuse to shoot Lex Luthor, guys. Come on.
That's all we're looking for here. We'll go with you on the journey. You just got to sell us at the beginning. So, yes, Santa knows a lot about him. But he's like, all right, well, I got a lot to do. I'm going to go. So he gets up. And, of course, he's kind of drunk. So he gets to stand up. He gets up to go off. And he falls off the roof. And Clark super speeds down and catches him and saves Santa Claus' life. We almost had a Santa Claus situation here. Clark almost had to really become Santa Claus, right?
Great movie. You should all check that one out. Oh. No, and then Santa just like kind of gives him a look and ho-ho-hos on down the street. He's like, oh!
Holy cow!
It just walks away. Like, okay. And I thought that was it. I was like, what a great little spot for this fake Santa. But oh no, we had more coming.
Well, I don't see, what if they just left it there? Would you have felt satisfied? Or
yeah, I mean, it's Superman saved the day, you know, like there was a depressed person on Christmas Eve and he talked them out of believing again, and the guy didn't try to jump, he slipped. Superman saved him. That's peak Superman to me.
I agree.
So it would have been a good ending for him. It only gets creepy when he shows up back in
It does get creepy, but we'll get yeah. So Santa goes on his way, and you think, oh, okay, well, that was a nice little, you know, a side quest that Clark went on there. And you think, oh, well, he's Superman. He has super speed. He'll be able to deliver all those presents, no problem. So then we cut back to Lex's fantasy, and Lex has come home with a big Christmas tree that Lana told him not to get. And then he's like, oh, well, Lana, you know what? I didn't buy this for us. I bought it for me because, you know, my mother died or whatever, you know.
Yeah, Lex, and the kid is giving me, I probably couldn't act my way out of a brown paper bag. I don't even know that's the expression, but this kid gave me so much Anakin episode one vibes.
The haircut, just, I think, right?
Just saying yippee, like just very just oh shucks, I'm just so happy to be alive, kid. I mean, it just made me laugh. It was cute because
Jake Lloyd, Anakin Skywalker from episode one, was in Jingle All the Way. So perhaps
he was in Jingle All the Way.
Yeah, crossing the streams
it's all,
there.
It's all connected, man.
Hashtag it's all connected.
You see it all.
But you know, Lex is telling the story and Lana and Lex Jr. are like humoring him. They're like, and he's like, do you understand? Does that make any sense to you? I always wanted this kind of tree. And Lana's like, of course it does, honey. You tell us that story every year. I'm like, oh, that's cute. So he's really getting away with being clueless about the last 7 years of his life, right?
Yeah.
I mean, he's just like, lucking
so
out.
Who are you? No one's even questioning. Why are you being so weird?
It's like, yeah.
How did you forget your life?
Yeah. I mean, he plays it close to the vest because I guess he doesn't want to ruin the day, but he's having such a great day. I mean, I think if his mom hadn't showed up at some point to be his guide, he would have been more questioning. You know, so at least that kind of, to me, that kind of explains why at some point you need to go, look, I don't know who you think I am, but I'm from 2005. So
just grab her by her shoulders. How did you get pregnant? Like, what are you doing?
It's a Clarks. So it's 7 years in the future. So that's winter 2012, which would have been the 12th season of Smallville, basically. So I'm just keep that in your mind, I guess, about when this would have taken place. So instead of being president of the United States,
he's trying to stuff a booster that doesn't need to be stuffed into a car. That's what he's trying to do. Instead of being the most powerful man in the free world, he's trying to figure out how to put a booster into the back of a sedan. I don't know what he's doing.
So then him and little Lexa pull the Christmas tree in the house. And I believe this is when Lana tells him, getting shot was the best thing that ever happened to you when you became the man I married, or, you know, just exposition for all of everyone at home, basically. Because who talks that? It's the quote-unquote, as you know, speech. Like when
they had another pretty good one with Chloe earlier at the tree farm where she started explaining about the book that she did. She's like, yeah, ever since you decided to tell all about your dad's company, all of us, it's like, oh, yeah, but like you wouldn't say that to him. He knows he did it. I get why. I mean, my wife, she was sure thankful because she had no idea what was going on. So I mean, it's just one of those. You know, Smallville does that a lot, though. They sometimes don't let the viewer be smart.
Well, a lot of shows do that. All right, we're picking on Smallville because we have a podcast about it. We're discussing, but like that.
Oh yeah,
like,
no.
That happens on Star Trek all the time. They're like, and they're like in the turbo lift going down to meet the aliens. They're like, so. Number one, what are these people all about? I'm like, did you not have a staff meeting before this? You're just showing up? Anyway, Data, what could you tell us about these aliens I'm about to meet in 5 minutes? But so then we go back to the real world, and Lionel has become appraised of the situation with Lex, and this is interspersed throughout all this, of course. And Dr. Scanlon is the doctor, a recurring character on the show. The old crusty white guy doctor, I think everybody remembers him. He's like, oh, I'm the doctor. You know, the good news is, his condition is stable. The bad news is he's going to be paralyzed from the waist down, or the shoulders down.
Chest down, which is a weird way of saying it. He's going to be paralyzed from the chest down.
because there's some internal bleeding, and it's creating pressure on a spinal column, that kind of thing. And Lionel, this is very Lionel. He's like, oh, no, my son is going to walk. And he's like, oh, doctor. And this is very spot on for Lionel because, as Lex calls him out on it at the end of the episode, I mean, it's bad enough for Lionel that his son is a quote-unquote freak being bald.
Yeah.
But he's certainly not going to have a cripple, quote-unquote, as Lex describes the situation at the end of the episode, for a son. And this totally tracks with Lionel. Like, the doctor says he needs to stay here. You're putting his life in danger. And so he gets moved, and that could have killed Lex. But Lionel does it anyway. But this is, I 100% buy what Lionel does here.
Yeah, yeah. I just love it. He's like, I wish the doctor would have looked at him after. He's like, no, I was like, did you not just hear me? I said he's paralyzed. You can't just fix that. Like, he's like, no, I'm going to find a specialist, which, do we have a counter for the specialist in Metropolis?
Well, there is. They don't say it in as many terms here, but in the fantasy land future, Lex does mention it later on, so we'll bring it up there. So Lex, he's going to get paralyzed by like the pressure of the internal bleeding. Like, he's not paralyzed yet, so he's not going to undo it. But they can do a radical procedure that's very risky to potentially stop it from happening. And that's why Lionel takes the risk. But yeah, it's like, okay, your son is going to live, or he probably would die if we do this, but there's a shot he could walk. And of course, Lionel does that. So then he sends him off to Metropolis or whatever. So then we come back to Chloe at the Daily Planet, and she's there with all her presents. And as you mentioned earlier, it's kind of a creepy, kind of threatening horror movie vibe almost, where Santa shows up. He's like, hello, Chloe. And she's like, Santa? Right? Is that not a horror movie setup right there?
Yeah, he's like, hey, let me help. Please let me help. You know I can help. If I don't help, I'll just get away with a couple of squirt guns. It's like, man, back up.
It's a 19, 20-year-old girl by herself on Christmas Eve.
Alone.
This hobo Santa is here.
You know, Mika Booze, get out of here. I'm going to call security.
How did you get in here?
Also, going back to Clark saving him, did you catch that when Clark super speeds down and catches him, he also saves the booze?
That's right, Superman. He knows how much that costs.
Catches the bottle.
Does he give it back to Santa?
I don't know.
Here. Don't drink and drive.
Yeah.
Keep this clothes on the way home, Santa, all right?
Yeah,
But yeah, he's like, oh, let me help. And Chloe's like, well, okay. And she turns around, like, okay, well, I got all my papers, and then she turns around and everything's gone.
You do hear the Christmas magical tingle, though.
You hear the Christmas, the stock audio of Christmas magic happening behind her.
That's when you know Christmas magic is happening, when you hear that sound.
I want to know what the hell Clark was doing, because, I mean, that room was still pretty full.
Yeah.
How long did he talk for Santa? Like 3 hours? So
he only got like 5 houses done, then he stopped to talk to Santa. The little girl's like, hey, that. And I guess he just, I don't know what he did. Maybe he just like, called it a night. I don't know. Wanted to get back to Lana? There's a party going on?
All the presents are gone.
To which, if Chloe didn't immediately connect that Santa's real, I would have thought, how the heck did he steal all those that quick? That's pretty amazing.
Santa's a meteor freak.
This guy, yeah. Like, yeah. Yeah, go to the, like, when she's explaining to him later, like, he must be the real Santa. Like, you guys have seen all kinds of crazy things. It's not a stretch to say this guy was a meteor freak, but you're like, no, it's Santa. He's real.
You know what they should have done? They should have made a Martian Manhunter. When John Joe showed up, he's like, hey, you know that drunk Santa from a few years ago? That was me.
That would have been great.
Yes, but...
because I've always been watching over you, Clark, the whole time. You just didn't see it because I was hiding so well.
There you go. If only he was eating Oreos instead of drinking alcohol. So, so the presents are done. So I guess Chloe can, you know, go to the kids' party. I don't know what time she was supposed to be working on Christmas. This is all the same night, as you pointed out. Yeah. This is a long night, right?
We have to talk about everything Lex Luthor went through at the end of this, because he went through a lot in a day.
Yeah. Well, yeah, and then his, you know, Lexman's fantasy, you know, he lived a whole day, and then he woke up in the morning. So then we go back to that fantasy land in Lex's head, and we're on the porch of the Kent house, and he's like, oh, the Kent's party later. And you're like, oh, is it going to be Clark and Chloe's house? No, it's Jonathan and Marcia's house. So they show up, and everybody's so happy to see Lex and Lana, and Clark gives him a big hug, and Jonathan comes, and Jonathan has the glasses. You know, Clark can't have the glasses, but Jonathan can, right?
Some weird glasses, too. Every time I watch that, I'm like, those are some strange looking glasses.
It's supposed to be like old guy glasses, I guess. Yeah. I mean, is that what they're going for there?
Hair all slicked back, looking buff in his suit. I mean, yeah, he's looking good.
They try to make Jonathan and Martha look a little older, but you know, and hey, you know, this is the timeline again where Jonathan didn't die, so he became the senator and et cetera, et cetera. Turns out that Lex Luthor has won Humanitarian of the Year
in the state of Kansas. What did Lex Luthor do?
Right, I mean, when he doesn't have the
Kansas Humanitarian Award.
Well, I mean, when he doesn't have access.
Presented at a senator's Christmas party house, not at some formal thing. He's like, hey, by the way, guys.
To the finest man I know. I wish you were my own son. I'm like, what is it? See, this kind of stuff makes me think this is all in Lex's head, all right?
Couldn't even rent out a conference room. We're going to do this in my house to save money. To the best man I know, here's a plaque. Like, what did he do?
And then, without the resources of Luthor Corp to do anything, he's just like just a struggling, you know, middle-class dad. It's like, what, you know.
Because you married Lana, my son got his act together and did something with his life.
Finally, yes.
You're the finest man I know.
Thank God for getting him off that Lana track, Lex. Thank you so much.
He's a reporter now. Right. Just got promoted. Thank you.
So, you know, it's Lex has always wanted to be a member of the Kent family. So, again, this is like wish fulfillment for Lex, which makes you think
they're hamming it up, too. They're hamming it up a little bit. Everyone's like, you know, here with their wine glasses up, and everyone's just loving Lex. And he's really getting everything that he really wants on the inside.
Yeah. And he goes outside, and he starts talking to his mom again. And
well, first, like, they don't reveal his mom. He's just like, what is this? I was like, is he talking to God? He's like, God?
This is the best day of my life.
And it
probably is. I mean, you think about how tough Lex had a...
Which is sad. The best day of his life is like a fantasy he's having while he's dying.
Well, but there's something to say for that. This is, and we talked about this on the Patreon as well, like this and Reckoning are like the same for Clark and Lex. And like the perfect days they experience here in those episodes, they end up chasing those for like the rest of the show to a certain extent, which is interesting and sad and tragic, you know, because it's like Clark, it was time travel. But allegedly, this is really what would have happened 7 years from now if Lex would have made some different choices. So,
yeah. And I guess this is kind of like, it kind of makes season six kind of seem a little bit more interesting that Lex was so focused on being married to Lana and having a kid.
Right. No, because you think about, you think about this and you're like, if this happened to you, you'd be like, well, what do I have to do to get back there? I know that they're not thinking this deep for like the overall arcs of the characters, but looking at it, you're like, oh, well, this is why Clark is so fixated on Lana even past season five, because he asked her to marry her. She said yes, they were going to live happily ever after, right? And that got undone. Then Lex is so fixated on Lana because he had this perfect day. As far as he knows, it was going to be the future. You know, he was married to Lana. They were happy. They had kids. You know, he was friends with everybody. Like, it was the best day of his life. So I can see, like, these what-if episodes of season five can inform the decisions of these characters the rest of the show. So I find that really interesting. And again, if you think about this happening to you, you would pretty much do the same thing, more or less.
Yeah, I would try to definitely control every aspect of everything to try to get that to happen again. So yeah, this episode is getting better for me than it already was.
There you go. All right, and it makes season six better by proxy. So what an
accomplishment. Yeah, it does. Yeah, yeah.
So, but the Lillian out there, she tells Lex, she's like, "This could be yours if the price is right. This could be yours if you make the right choice." She's like, "What are you talking about?" It's like, why are you so? You're my ghost guy. Why don't you just tell me? You know. But hey, free will versus predestination, right? He's got to make the right choice himself. He can't be told what to do.
And for some reason, he can't obviously see it. It's like, I should just not be like my dad.
Well, but then there is the cost at the end too, and that's what's smart about the episode. If it was so obvious, you know, like, you ever play these like Knights of the Old Republic? I don't know if you're.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
So famous Star Wars video game. You could choose the light or the dark side, but it's like you approach these children. You ask them for help nicely, or you slaughter them. Which one is the light side and which one's the dark side? Oh, okay. You know, life is not that simple, And that's the tragedy of Lex Luthor, because the reason he makes the choices he does, because he doesn't want the tragedies to happen. He wants to secure everything, you know, money and power and all that. We'll get to at the end. But that's why he does what he does. So anyway, Lex is talking to himself. Or at least that's what he says to Clark, because Clark's like, "Who are you talking to, Lex?"
Yeah, I love how he just comes in there with that.
And he's like holding a glass of, you know, he's older now, so he's cool. He's got a glass of champagne. It's funny, Tom Welling playing close to his actual age here, playing 7 years older than Clark.
Probably but, acting more like he really wants to be.
Right, like, this is a very Michael Rosenbaum, Tom Welling scene, right? He's like, "Me and Lana, how the hell did that happen?"
Yeah, that's definitely something you ask an ex-boyfriend. Yeah, how did I get with the ex that you were obsessed with all your life?
It's like, well, Lex, you know, you became the man she could love. He's like, oh, the guy you always were. It's like, why are we having this conversation right now?
Is that a compliment? It's like, she didn't love you how you were. You had to fully change yourself to get her to love you, man.
So Lex asks Clark, and he's like, what held you back, Clark? I know you loved loved her. Because he said love, you know, and he's like, well, you know, I just wasn't ready. Maybe I never will be. But hey, I'm happy for y'all, which makes me think, okay, are he and Chloe together or not? I need answers.
That definitely like tore a hole in my cell when he said that.
He should be like, me and Chloe are happy. You and Lana are happy. Like, that's all I needed, you know.
But
they were not. Remember, they were not saying her name intentionally from the writer of the episode, so they didn't want to like. Me and, you know, Little Miss Pulitzer Prize in there. I mean, what do you say, right? So anyway, you know, and I love this genuine moment of them at the end. He's like, well, I'm just glad we could both stay such good friends. And they hug each other. I'm like, oh. So as much as it sucks that, like, Clark and Lex aren't friends on Smallville, obviously, it's great that Tom Welling and Mike Rosenbaum have stayed friends, because it's such a joy to see. So anyway, that reminded me of that. So then Martha runs out on the porch, and she's like, Lex, it's Lana. The baby's coming. You know, so they all have to, you know, go to the hospital and stuff. And speaking of hospital, now that Lex is in the Metropolis Clinic or something.
The Davis
Clinic in Metropolis. Yeah. the surgeon, man, he is like, he is Dr. Strange before he had his accident, right? He's arrogant, isn't he?
I don't know. He's like, I'm about to perform a Christmas miracle. And he might as well just like ask him to order a pizza and have like some beers ready at the end of it. Like, he was just out of character. And also, we're sitting there watching them, and like Jessica was like, my wife, she was like, hey, didn't he have like a like pressure on his spine? Like, yeah. She's like, why are they going through the front of him? Like, why is he turned over and they're working on his back? I was like, I don't know, actually.
Well, that's why it was such a risky procedure, you see.
Yeah. You got to go past all the organs to the spine. Right.
But, you know, as ridiculous as that was, it's amusing. It kind of adds some character to it. What would have been yet another generic hospital scene. So we go from that hospital to Smallville General Hospital in the future. And so we have a +2 now for hospital visits because now Lana is in the hospital. And she has the baby. You know, it's a beautiful girl. Yay, right? And Lex is like, oh, thank you, with a great Christmas present. She's like, oh, you had a little to do with it or something. That was pretty funny, I thought. So, but you know, that's the you know what? Lex and Lana, Michael Rosenbaum and Kristen Kirk have great chemistry in this episode, I think. Like, this is one of the most likable episodes of this whole Lex-Lana thing out of the whole thing.
If they just would have kept that spirit, it might have been a little bit better next season. But no, it was good, man. And like once again, that's me looking at the actors and saying like they're enjoying doing this, they're having fun. Lana gets to do something a little different than what she normally does, and it's kind of fun to see that.
But things take a quick turn for the worse because Lana starts having some issues. You know, and they have to hand the baby off, and Lex is like, "What's wrong with her?" And they find out that it's a very serious condition that can't be solved there, but with the right treatment. Perhaps it's some clinic in Metropolis, ironically, right? I'm sure there's something to be said for that. It could be. So then Lex goes to old Ebenezer Scrooge, his dad, right? It's very, it's the way it feels, right? And, you know, they never bothered to build Lionel a house. So whenever we find him, he's just either at Luther Corp or at the mansion. Now, why Lionel be hanging out at the Luther Mansion in Smallville at this point is beyond me.
Man, and I really do like this scene because, like, you know, the whole time everything's kind of been bright and kind of gold, and everyone that he's wanted affection from was like super affectionate and so nice and so loving. And then we go to like this dark, like spotlight on like the person he despises, and he's just like pure peak Lionel evil. And it's so fun. It's so much fun.
Yeah, but this is interesting though, right? Because this is the future, but Lionel is like a bad guy. So obviously, they're not thinking of all these other arcs they were doing with his character at the time. But, but you know, in this timeline, you know, Jonathan didn't die and Lionel stayed a bad guy. You know, just interesting to think about how things could have played out differently. But this does show you, like, as much as I've been saying, clearly this is Lex's fantasy because everyone likes him way too much. He's getting all his hopes and dreams. It balances out at the end because because what does he always want? His dad to love him, right? Well, that's not happening here.
No, you know? Not at all.
He goes to his dad, he's like, Dad, he's like, well, what do you need, son? That's the only reason you'd be here on Christmas Eve, right? And we get our 7 years ago, as you know, son, you turned your back on me, right? But you know what? That's the way they talk to each other, so I buy it more here.
It's more natural with them than anybody else.
Yeah, it's just the way their manner of speech and all that. You know, Lex basically just says, hey, Lana's going to die, but I need, you know, the resources to get her to the specialist in Metropolis, so we got a +1. For from Metropolis, because he mentions there's a specialist in Metropolis.
He said we need the jet?
Yeah, because he wanted to get her there.
Does the hospital not have any kind of helicopter transportation?
I mean, maybe they didn't have good insurance. I don't know. But yeah, I mean, you think the life lighter to Metropolis?
Hospital's like, look, man, if you don't find somebody with a private jet, we're kind of SOL. I'm sorry. Yeah. You don't know anybody on a private jet, do you? Because our helicopter guy's on vacation. Yeah.
So it's Christmas Eve. It's Christmas Eve, man. But Lionel's like, no, bah humbug, you know?
Yes.
But no, it really is a dark scene. And it's because this is what you always fear, you know, like when, and this is what informs Lex's decision at the end of the episode. Had he had the power and had he had the money of the Luthers, he could have saved Lana's life here. And Lionel tells him, like, no, when you renounced this family and me, and then you renounced all the money and power it could have took to save her. So good day, sir. You know, and like, damn.
It's interesting because Lionel's just so evil in this fantasy that he's like, no, Lex, I'm going to willfully let a person die out of spite for you.
To prove a lesson to you.
To prove a lesson. I'm going to commit negligent homicide. And so we're sitting there, and my wife's like, couldn't he have called? Like he's saying that his wife could die at any moment. Why would he leave under any circumstance?
Well, you know, it's Smallville. The mansion's nearby. Maybe he thought, okay, if I can see him face to face, because even Lex was surprised. You know, obviously earlier in the episode they get that little gift basket.
Corporate popcorn.
Like, what's this? It's like, well, that's from your dad. He's like, well, this is a corporate gift. This can't be from my father. And she's like, well, Lex, as you know, 7 years ago, you walked away from your family. So he thought, okay, if I go to him face to face, you know, maybe I can convince him that way. You know?
Yeah.
So I think,
no, I mean, I get it. It's just funny to be like, well, it's not funny, but it's just like, he just shows up and it's like, nah, that's a sad story, man, but I'm just going to say no.
Well, you know, and I'll say, no matter what your family situation is, I think everybody can kind of see shades of what's, you know, what could potentially happen to them with family dynamics, and everybody has, you know, different family dynamics. But I'm saying, you guys know that, you know, what I'm saying here. You know, you can all, you know, that's the power of scenes like this. You're like, man, like, ugh, this is, you know. So you feel Lex's pain here, you know, because he's like, well, you know, Lana could be saved had I just, you know, been the Luther that I used to be, right? So he has to, you know, go back to the hospital, and him and Lana have a nice moment at the end. That's when he's, and I love Rosenbaum's acting here. This is like A+ acting. He's like, Lana, I don't know if I tell you, I probably tell you every day, but I just need to tell you that I love you. And I'm like, oh, that's good. And then he goes in the whole like, I've always loved you. And I'm like, oh, not so good.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Pull back. I use the first part of that speech quite often in my relationship. I know you probably may say this every day, but I'm
just
saying.
But now you can't get away with it now because you showed her the episode. That's the.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Wait, I hope she never sees the episode where Clark tells Lois, I can never live in a world where you don't love me.
There it is. Did you use the Smallville vows at your wedding? Don't show her the finale.
She will never see that.
That's what I'm telling Lance. I'm like, Lance, you got to get married, man, so I can use Clark's best man speech. You know? From calling, you know. So anyway. Oh man, but no, I half of what I say in life is from fiction. It's so Smallville, you know, Star Trek, Superman, things like a Batman, you know. But good stuff here, like a really, all jokes aside about, oh, I've always loved you, right? All that aside. Yeah.
Oh, great scene, powerful great, scene. Great emotion. It gets you. It's believable. You really see that he's really getting a glimpse of everything that he wants and having it ripped away just that quickly. So it's really, he's just great. He's just great at what he does. So it's good.
And a little earlier in the same setup, when Lana first starts to get sick and his mom's ghost is there, or spirit or whatever. And he's like, what did you do to her? You know, I thought you were supposed to show me a happily ever after. She's like, I did. I showed you years of love. You know? And, you know, could they have not have, you know, shown him the future of like, you know, 3 years in the future, yeah. He might have chose. He's like, oh, well, great. You know, this is great. Of course I'm going to choose this, you know. But to show him, like, the very end of it, of course he's going to be like, well, screw that. You know, like, I can yeah, do better than that.
You feel bad because he goes on his rant to her. He's like, everyone that I loved has died.
Julian,
like,
you Lana.
You just feel bad. You're like, man. He's like, and I've always loved all of you, including Lana, when I first met her.
And that is the tragedy of this Lex Luthor.
Yeah.
Like, that's why he is such a three-dimensional character, like a fully fleshed out, because you're like, you know what, he makes bad choices, he ultimately does become the villain, but he got dealt a bad hand in life, right? Clark also got dealt a bad hand. I mean, he has a lot of tragedy in his life too, but he had the Kents, you know, and that is really what, and that makes, that's the difference, nature versus nurture, the Kents and the Luthers. That's what this show was about, and episodes like this tap into that, and that's what makes that's why, you know, that is something that is Smallville's strongest component, I think, when they tap into that stuff. So, but yeah, Lana dies, and we have a +1 for main character death because Lana dies. And then Lex wakes up. He's like, Lana! Because, you know, if Lex or Clark ever wake up, they have to shout, Lana!
Wakes up in a hospital.
At the Davis Clinic.
At the Davis Clinic with Lionel, I'm sure the last person he wants to see.
And Lionel's like, oh, of course, Lana. Yeah, get over it, son.
He's like, oh, yeah, you're going to be fine. There's this crazy surgery. But, like, if you look back at the heart rate monitor, like, it's all over the place. He's not, like, I don't think he was actually fine there.
He just saw his wife die in his head, all right? So that's why he's
all over the place.
He's worked up. So, anyway, Lana's like, oh, you're going to be fine, son. You know. So then we cut back to the Kents having their little Christmas party, and Chloe and Clark are talking about how Santa Claus is real.
Yeah.
Clark's like, are you serious? She's like, I think it was the real Santa.
I love Clark being an alien, seeing everything he's seen. Just like, nah, that's too much for
that's
me.
Ridiculous, no. Chloe.
That's the dumbest thing I've ever heard you say. And you once told me a girl controlled bees. And I think that hearing Santa is real is stupid.
Santa never makes a return appearance in Smallville. So hoping he'd show up at one of the February sweeps or something.
About to tweet Guggenheim tonight. Dude, will we get an appearance? We want Santa.
We want hashtag Santa in crisis.
Release the Santa cut. That's
release
what we
the
want.
Santa cut. So it's cute, and as always in season 5, Clark and Chloe have their their cute wrap up scenes, and season 5 is they're such a great team.
So flirtatious.
Yeah, it's highly inappropriate. It's like, Clark, I don't know if you're leading her on, if you're oblivious, I was talking about this with Lance in one of the other earlier episodes, and he was like, Lana knows Chloe's no threat. It's fine. She doesn't care. Yeah, I was horrible. Like, I guess not. This girl's been in love with you for like 5 years. But
what a life Lana lives. A beautiful blonde girl has no threat to her. What a life. Then it something happened to Smallville that I have yet to see in my life. It snowed on Christmas Eve. I have yet to see a white Christmas.
Everyone goes outside to experience this magical white Christmas. And Clark and Lana are out there, and it's like, Merry Christmas, Lana. It's like, Merry Christmas, Clark. The first of many. Like,
I'm surprised Chloe didn't pop in. Merry Christmas, you two. Like, just still being in. Don't forget about me. God, I'm. She's like, God, I miss Pete. Like, come on.
It's like when you first start dating somebody, you want to last. You're like, hey, happy Valentine's Day, the first of many. It's like, nope. Sometimes it's true. Sometimes it's not. But in this situation, it is awkward. It is weird because you got this whole episode. It's, the crux of it is Lex and Lana in this fantasy land, right? And then you get some really intense, like, Lana and Clara, like, oh, this is the happiest I've ever been on Christmas, and da 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 da. And so the juxtaposition there is interesting, and as Superman fans, we all know that Clark Kent doesn't end up with Lana Lang.
I had no idea Lana Lang. I was like, man, this is a horrible play on Lois Lane. What, they could get more creative than Lana Lang? Like, that's literally my thought process when I watched.
They didn't have the rights to Lois Lane. Yeah. They made up this character.
I legit thought it was something like that. I was like, I had no idea, but yeah.
Interesting. So, but you knew they weren't going to be together, right?
Oh yeah. Okay. I knew they weren't going to be together.
Because you knew that because of this episode, you knew that Lex and Lana were destined to be together. Yeah.
So. Yeah, I was like, oh, so we're going to have Clark and Lois versus Lex and Lana. It's going to be great, but that didn't even work out that way.
We have a couple of last scenes at the hospital. Lex calls Lionel in. He's like, oh, you wanted to see me, son? It can wait. He thinks that it's like Lex is going to thank him for saving his life. But Lex kind of throws at him. He's like, yeah, life-threatening procedure. How dare you play God with my life, right?
Correct me if I'm wrong. Didn't Lex do something like this with Lionel a couple of years ago in the show?
Continuity. Once again, right. It's in season 1, right? Lionel had some, he got buried in all this rubble at the Luther Mansion and the tornado. And then Lex chose to do a questionable procedure, a risky procedure.
And he became blind because of that, right?
He saved his legs, but he lost his sight. And it's like, if I were Lionel, I'm like, hey, remember when you made me blind?
Yeah. I mean, and like, I get it because, like, I get Lex's frustration because he just went through this whole fantasy of learning that if he took control of his own life, this could have happened. But then he wakes up to reality to realize that his dad is still controlling his life, even in that situation. I get his frustration. It makes good narrative sense, but like, it's just kind of weird. He like totally forgot that he had done a very similar thing just a couple years ago to his dad.
Well, Lionel's like, okay, this is not the time to bring that up, I guess. So.
Yeah. I'll let him have it.
This is where Lex says, like, hey, you didn't do this to save my life. You did it because you couldn't stand the thought of having a son that was a cripple, which makes me think of actually season 6 in Labyrinth, where Lex is in a wheelchair because his legs have been amputated. Because in that alternate reality, or that one isn't Clark's head. That's not an alternate reality. That's all in Clark's head. But, Clark didn't have powers, and Lex swerved in the road to avoid him in the pilot, and he, wrapped around a pole and end up amputating his legs. But anyway, that's what that made me think of. And yeah, Merry Christmas from the Luthers, right?
Wonderful family.
and then we get, I think chronologically the Kent party scene was in between these, but whatever. And then we get our final scene of the episode, and it is Griff has come to see Lex at the hospital. So Lex is like, I thought you didn't make house calls. He's like, well, you know, Merry Christmas, right?
You were shot in the alley right outside. So I'll make an exception. Exactly.
You know, they have a little bit of a back and forth. And this is a great monologue by Lex. And this is like defines the character of Lex Luthor. This could be like, I can see the comic panels in my head of like the little thought bubbles and like seeing images of Lex Luthor doing nefarious things. He's like, you know what the secret to living happily ever after is? Power. Money and power. Because once you have those two things, you can secure everything else.
As soon as he asked the question, me and my wife both together said, love. He said, power. We're like, oh.
You learned the wrong lesson.
No. Yeah, no, great, great villain. Like for me, watching this show, I was like, all right, cool. This is now full-fledged. Like, it's not going to be anymore. I do good things every once in a while. Like, he is straight up bad guy now. And I could not wait to see Clark Kent become Superman in the next couple of episodes. And I had no idea this show was this long.
Yeah, it's like five seasons, right? And we're wrapping it up here, all right? The stretch run, you know?
Everything's making sense.
And this is what I'm saying. Like, the first two-thirds of this, they had it all plotted out. It seemed like they were working towards the end. Chloe was going to become Lois Lane. I'm glad I have such a hardcore fellow Clovis fan on here to discuss this.
Oh, yeah.
As you've heard, I brought it up on occasion, but I don't really go too deep.
I love it every time. I always laugh because I'm like, man, I just wish that I can be in the conversation to like help defend whoever's arguing with that.
Well, this episode, this is the one to talk about because we got the writer saying, yeah, we had some fun with it. We thought maybe it could happen. I'm like, what?
Oh, this is confirmation. We win. That's confirmation.
We win indeed. Argument.
Debate over.
But Lex here, he decides to, you know, he tells Captain Pike here, Griff, he tells him, I want you to pull the pin on that grenade. Find it, fake it, do whatever you can to get Jonathan Kent out of the race. I want to be senator. So there you go. I mean, and this really is a turning point. This could have been, and you know, in the grand scheme of things, because the show runs 10 years, you know, it loses its significance of like a turning point. But, you know, I think it really does. It signifies a turning point for the character. Like you said, it's no more like, I'm Lex and I try to do the right thing, but people don't like me. It makes me do the bad thing. This is like, no, I'm out for myself, number one here. And because, you know, that's the thing. Because the lesson here is he saw if he did the right thing, he would have 7 years of happiness. And he'd get love and respect, but Lana would die, right? And so that's not good enough for him. So he's like, okay, I'm going to take matters in my own hands. Right, I'm gonna ignore the advice of the sagely advice of my mom or the spirit of my mom or whatever. I don't know why she knows these things, but whatever. But screw that, right? I'm gonna do what I know is wrong, but I'm gonna do it anyway because I think I'm smarter than destiny or whatever. And that's Lex Luthor. Yeah. So I think this is great.
This is definitely the part where I'm like, okay, Lex Luthor knows what he's doing now. It's no longer like, oh, you know, I was just trying to save the world ambitions, or you know, he's like, no, I'm just gonna do what I want to do now, which is the Lex Luthor we all enjoy.
Yeah. And that's the tragedy of this character. Had he made the right choices, yes, Lana would have died, right? But that's interesting how that's like a constant. Like no matter what you do, Lana dies. Like it's kind of like, you know, heroes, right? No matter what they did for 4 years, Nathan always died. You know, he's like, that is the immovable object of destiny. You know, in some respects, it's like, well, Lana should have died. You know, I mean, and I've said this before, and an interesting way they could have done it as well is have Lana be the Gwen Stacy of the show, you know, in Reckoning she dies, like Jonathan dies first, and then Clark, you know, does the time travel thing, and then Lana dies, right? And that completely changed the dynamics of the entire series. I understand why they didn't do it. I'm just saying, like, there's possibilities here. So so there you have it. You know, Lex makes his choice for evil. It's Christmas outside and the snow is falling. We see him look out the window, and then the ghost of his mom appears next to him, looking very disappointed, I guess. And that's the end of the episode.
Yeah, man, what a day! In one day, Lex Luthor was shot, carjacked, left for dead, rushed to a hospital, partially paralyzed, transferred to another city, and had emergency spine surgery, and recovered, all able to stand up at the end of the day. To say he wants power. What a guy Lex Luthor is.
Much like Ebenezer Scrooge, I realize that what I want more than anything is to live happily ever after. And you know what the secret to living happily ever after is? money and power. See, once you have those two things, you can secure everything else and keep it that way. So what am I doing here, Lex? I want you to pull the pin on that grenade. Find it, fake it. Do whatever it takes to knock Jonathan Kent out of the race. I want to be senator. I want it all. Consider it done.
Lexmas got an 8.8 out of 10 on IMDb, and Neil Bailey from the Superman homepage gave it a 4 out of 5. So, Cavanta, I ask you, on the letter grade scale, what would you give Lexmas?
Guys, I think you've heard me this entire podcast. You know I love it. I'm going to give this an A. It is one of my favorite episodes. My wife, though, her first Fallout experience, gave it a C+ because she said Santa was alcoholic and suicidal. But no, it's a fun episode. You get to see the actors have fun doing what they're doing. It actually has a purpose. It pushes characters forwards in meaningful ways that impact the show. So it wasn't just a waste of 45 minutes. So yeah, I give it an A.
I was on the fence about what I was going to rank this. It's on our top 10 list. If this was by you, the fans. I didn't necessarily think it was an A+ episode. So I'm not going to go that far, but I'm going to agree with you. I'm going to give it an A. All right, I'm going to give this episode an A. So an A for you, an A for me. And let me tell you why. In lesser hands, this could have been more of like a filler.
Yeah.
What if, hey, Lex has a family. Oh, it's Christmas. Yeah. It's Santa's in it. You know, like, what is this, right?
Santa's real.
But they handled it really well. And, you know, I do think that, as I was talking about earlier, this episode is for Lex is what Reckoning was for Clark. Like they experience one perfect day and they spend the rest of the show chasing it, you know, in various ways and aspects, not the whole series. And it's all very subtle. But again, I say, if this happened to you, you would do the same thing. Of course, they both go about it very differently because they're different guys. But this helps inform why both these guys are so obsessed with Lana in the future, you know, because they saw a future where they lived happily ever after, or at least had the hope of doing so. So I can buy it. You know, this has helped me accept season 6 and 7.
Cause it's coming.
Second half of 8.
They're coming. You know?
So an A for you and an A for me. Let's move on to our tally board. So we have a +1 for From Metropolis. Cause in the scene where Lex goes to talk to Lionel about saving Lana's life, he's like, there's a specialist from Metropolis and we got to get her there. So +1 for that. That brings us to 15. And also in that scene, you know, Lex is like, I'm talking about my wife and talking about the mother, your grandson. And Lionel's like, grandson? How can I have a grandson when I don't have a son? I'm like, damn. Right?
Such a brutal line.
And no, right?
Oh, man.
Twist that knife, bro. But that brings us to 15 so far for From Metropolis. We have a +2 for hospital visits because Lex goes to the hospital in the real world and Lana goes to the hospital in the Lexmas world. So that brings us to 76 so far.
Oh, my.
Will we make 100 by the end of the season? We will see, boys and girls. We have a +1 for main character death because Lana dies in the Lexmas world. That brings us to 6 so far. I know Lance and I were had some trouble remembering what all 5 of them were last time. We talked about it in Hidden, you know, when Clark died.
Yeah.
And I think we figured it out, but I don't remember what that was. So I don't know. but if you count back, let's try to figure it out here real quick. You count backwards. Lana died here in Lexmas.
Yes.
Clark died in Hidden.
Yes.
Did anyone die in season 4? Oh, Jason Teague. All right.
Jason Teague died.
That's 3. Clark died in Talisman, I think we counted that.
Yes.
So that's four. Martha died in Fever.
I forget that one. That's the one I forget.
And Whitney died in Visage. So there you have it. We figured it out. We also have a plus one for movie plot as an episode. This is can vaguely be seen as mini movies, but you know, It's a Wonderful Life, A Christmas Carol.
Two out of every five Hallmark Christmas movies.
I'm going to zero in on The Family Man. That's the one. Yeah. So it's all, I'll share that's the trailer for that because that's the one I kind of gravitated towards. But yes, movie plot and episode. That brings us to nine. So nice. I'm very impressed with the show. I thought it'd be higher than this. Season three had a stretch. I think the bulk of these are in season three. There's like a big stretch of, hey, you like this movie? Well, here's that, but it's a small episode. But we've kind of moved on from that for now.
And Zach, wait, we got one more. You got to remember this. It's Shut That Laptop.
I missed this. Where was this, Kamate?
So the scene where he's pleading to Lionel to get the jet to take Lana to the specialist in Metropolis, as he's trying to get the tension and Lionel's kind of talking up to him, he presses down on the open laptop and slams it shut as he's talking. Even Lionel takes a moment and kind of looks at her like, what are you doing?
All right. I did not catch that one. Good catch. So
he opens it back up after he leaves too and continues his work.
What is he doing on Christmas? That's why he's like so Scrooge. He's like Christmas Eve. He's like working the stock market or he's doing. let me consult the tally board then because I missed that. Good catch, Guante. Shut that laptop.
He's looking up YouTube videos.
Shut That Laptop plus one. That brings us to 15 so far. Nice. And that's going to do it for the tally board. The Bechdel test is a fail.
Yes. Yes. I don't even think two female characters talk to each other.
Well, when Lana shows up at the party, Chloe grabs her like, let's go get some punch. And that's...
Yes.
Which sounded real ADR to me, by the way. I was like, I actually rerun it. I'm like, was Allison Mack even in this scene? Because she's like behind some people. Like, did they use like a stunt double? Just to like, and they had Allison Mack like voiceover, and they walked, but no, it really was her. Also at the party, I think it was the present party. We see Shelby. Shelby's got the antlers on, grabbed a cookie. I really like that. That was pretty cute. So whenever Shelby gets some action,
which did they get rid of that plate, or they just let people continue eating the plate of cookies? I don't think they stopped it.
Yeah, it's like, hey, does anyone want a cookie? Don't eat those, Clark. So. Anyway, so yes, so there you have it for our tally board. So there you go, Gavante. A lot of fun talking Lexmas with you. Merry Christmas to all. So where can people find you out there on the internet, Gavante?
You can find me on Twitter tweeting about Smallville and sports stuff because I'm a giant sports fan. I'm a Tennessee fan, though, so go easy on me. It's at Chillus, @CHILL_US, which is how you pronounce my last name. I have a Facebook. You'll see me on the Facebook group, man. Friend request me talk about Smallville with me because I really, really do enjoy it.
All right. Well, Kavante, so much fun talking to you about Lexus, man. Thank you so much for taking the time to be on. It was a joy, and you'll definitely be back in the future.
Oh, thanks, man. Anytime.
So appreciate now you have that on air. Now I have to let you back on the show. So
yes.
So that's going to do it for us this week, and we'll be back next time. After this Fanatic. I think it is Fanatic. Is it Lockdown?
I'm about to find out.
Oh man,
let's see. Yeah, Fanatic. Yeah,
it's Fanatic. Okay, I was right. So Kamate will be back down the road, but we'll be back next time talking about Fanatic. But until then, always hold on to Smallville. All the kinfolk gather round the lovely Christmas tree. Hearts are glowing full of joy, says the gifts that we're giving and the love that we're living. Why can't it remain? All through the year. Each day the same.
that spirit of Christmas. Let me hear you.
Why can't it be made? That spirit of Christmas.